All right. Hello, everybody. This is Toby Milroy again, Chief Operating Officer for NASA. And we have pretty important topic today, and we really wanted to block out some time at the end of our call today, too, for open question and answer. Of course, you're welcome to email questions to either myself or Master Oliver at either TobyMilroy@NAPA.com or StephenOliver@NAPA.com, and that's StephenOliver@NAPA.com. And today's topic is we're kind of going back to basics. It's the summertime. Most of you should be really busy with these, you know, summer program type marketing activities that we do, especially out at the movie theaters. Harry Potter is coming up in a couple of weeks. I think next week, right? Not this coming week, but the week after. And the last several weeks have been really busy, and lots of schools are having great results with local carnivals, and you know, really getting out there and meeting their community, getting out there, getting in front of a group of several hundred prospects over the period of a weekend, and we're being very successful at converting them now. So the first thing we should look at after we've been, since we've been speaking to so many school owners one-on-one over the last several months, it really is time to go back to basics. There seem to be several, you know, key gaps that we see in schools who are trying to make that leap from struggling to successful. And, you know, perhaps not the first one, but an early one in the cycle is how they're bringing new students into the school. So once the phone rings, when someone comes in, when someone expresses interest in your program, in an awful lot of cases, school owners are just kind of, you know, throwing them into the class and, you know, quote, letting them try it for a few days and then trying to enroll them at the end of a couple of days. And there's an awful lot of science, maybe even a little bit of magic, that goes into what happens in the first few days, the first hour, the first experiences that your new customers have. So that's what we're spending today, this is a large part of today talking about, sort of sharing ideas and really kind of looking at the basics of what this thing really should look like. You know, what is proven in our market to work, what's proven not to work. So that will be sort of the frame of our conversation today, at least for the first part of our time together. So we also have on the line with us NAPMA CEO, Grandmaster Stephen Oliver. Master Oliver, thanks for taking some time with us today in the middle of the summer.
Yeah, always glad to be here. And it's exciting because we've been working with a lot of school owners one-on-one the last couple of months. So really getting a chance to hone in between the, you know, what most of the people who are losing are doing and versus the smaller number who are kicking it out, knocking it out of the park are doing. So it's revalidating what we already knew, but it's useful information to be able to share with everybody.
Yeah, and by the way, that is actually an interesting point, that it's kind of a double-edged sword, but, you know, one of the things that we talked about at these live events that we've been doing is one of the big differences, and I boil down the nine biggest differences between the top 20% of the industry and the bottom 80%. And one of those nine things, and it's a very fundamental thing, but one of those things is that the bottom 80% of any industry, but of course ours as well, end up being surrounded by other bottom 80%ers just by accident, right? They didn't really plan it that way, but they're just sort of surrounded by their peers at, you know, their association meetings or tournaments or, you know, whatever the case may be. And they kind of share the same strategies that aren't really working very well with each other back and forth, right? But top 20%ers deliberately seek out other top 20%ers and spend time learning and sharing and collaborating with them. And what you just said is I think interesting because, you know, we're surrounded by top 20%ers, in most cases top 2%ers, really frequently. So sometimes we forget that schools are really struggling with the front end of their business. I mean, the intro process is kind of like one of the easiest things in my mind to execute well, right? It really is. I mean, because, you know, you just have to have the right architecture in place and have people who are passionate about what they do. But it's just not reality. You know, the bottom 80% of the industry, and maybe even more, really have a hard time when a new student comes in. Their conversion rate from, you know, new first visit to person, you know, committing to training, signing a contract, making a down payment, making a commitment to train for a certain period of time, that conversion ratio for the typical school in the U.S. is probably below 50%. And in the top 20% of schools, it's over 80%. So if this is a struggle for you, today's call will be really valuable for you. But you know, I think what you just said, Mr. Oliver, is an interesting problem that we have is that you know, sometimes we forget that this is a common struggle for schools.
Well, and you just said three or four things there, and I'm going to point them out because we take them as given, but it, apparently it's not a given. Is one is schools. Some schools think of a 4-week trial, a 6-week trial, a 90-day trial, $100 down, $100 a month. They think of that as an enrollment. And what we're thinking of in enrollment is $400 down, $200 a month, $397 down, $197 a month, $359 down, $159 a month for a 12-month enrollment. And so, you know, first of all, when we're talking about an 80% conversion, we're talking about an 80% conversion for a solid new student who's going to be there, one of our new key performers. We had this conversation, and the deal was basically bring them in, have them, I guess, sign an agreement, but the agreement was nothing down, take lessons for a month, give us some billing information, and if you like it in a month, we'll keep billing you. And if you want to cancel in the third month, you can cancel, and if you want to cancel at any time with 30 days or 60 days notice, you can cancel. And then the same people who do that wonder why both they have a weak sales process, but they also have horrible retention. So, you know, let's not discount the fact that, you know, we're talking about a high sales ratio with a down payment, with an agreement, with a commitment, with a reasonable level of tuition, meaning, you know, at least 150 and up per month on a new enrollment. So all of those factors both contribute to the longevity of the school, but are important in the context of having a tight closing ratio.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and there are so many parallels out there to model, and some I think just, I don't want to go through the details because it's there's so many and it would take us forever, but what, you know, you do want to make careful observations of businesses that are similar to our business, which is what we've done. Mr. Oliver, you've been a master at this for years and years and years, and me now by proxy, I guess, have been kind of thrust into this opportunity to study other business models that are very similar to the martial arts industry. And obviously, you know, dance schools, gymnastics schools, cheerleading, swimming, other children's activities are similar examples to our business. However, those industries are about 15 years behind the martial arts industry, frankly, as far as their evolution. So they're probably not a great model to try to model or to learn from. However, there are businesses who are very similar to ours who are fee-for-services over time, but I would submit we should add the word professional in there. So we should be looking at businesses that are fee-for-professional services over time. And things like private tutoring, you know, high-level private tutoring, Sylvan Kumon Huntington, high-level health and fitness fields like chiropractic or cosmetic surgery, or you know similar models where a customer relationship begins with an evaluation. They make a buying decision. They decide that they're going to participate in whatever the program is, and that program takes a number of months to deliver, and in some cases years to deliver. So it is useful to observe those, and really that's what we've kind of done, and you've done for years and years and years, to make it simple for our folks, right?
And maybe to make it even clearer, what the way the industry has evolved is our industry has evolved really from two sources. It evolved from Fred Astaire, Art Linkletter, Arthur Murray, dance studios, and it's evolved from health clubs. And to a great extent, what you see in much of the divide, frankly, in the U.S. among schools who knowingly or without knowing it have sorted themselves into one of two camps, but we're seeing the ones who are making a good living have ended up through our coaching or through happenstance or through some other mechanism have ended up in more of the Arthur Murray, Art Link letter. I mean, people forget that, you know, many, many years ago they had a business model that was well thought out. Have either ended up in that camp, solid down payment, solid enrollment, high tuition, a prep for the renewal, a down payment and a monthly payment on the renewal, a solid renewal process in place. Those schools are the ones that, you know, in almost 99 times out of 100, are the ones that are making money. I mean, the ones that are making money are in that camp. The ones that are not making money, unless they are super high volume, and there are a few, but it's rare, are the ones that fit into the fitness industry model, who have a extremely low or no down payment, really don't have a renewal process in place, have a month-to-month agreement of some sort in place, or have a renewal that, or an enrollment that just automatically rolls over into a renewal. Many times it's, you know, $89 down and $49 a month, EFT until you cancel. And so the fitness industry model requires super high volume in order to work, which is very difficult to replicate in a traditional martial arts school environment. However, the Art Link Letter Arthur Murray model works just fine. And so, you know, those are the evolution, I think, that people don't see in the way that the martial arts happens. And the mistake that people who have legitimately and solidly taught MMA, the mistake that they have made, and it's not a new mistake, this keeps cycling through the industry, it's just most people don't learn from the past, is they end up back in the health club model. Same problem that the cardio kickboxing people, Taibo and cardio karate and stuff, when they did that, they started trying to emulate health clubs rather than to emulate a business model that was going to create long-term students and make, you know, and make money. So it's a very different model. But anyway, we probably should get into some nuts and bolts of what we've seen with people doing the introductory process. And Toby, let's not forget to remind everybody, for all the peak performers in our circle, we did a fabulous sales training workshop. And that sales training workshop, we, in nauseating detail, covered every possible objection, every possible kink in the armor of the process. And it's all on video and audio, so we've recorded all, and I think right now the audio recordings are all available for everybody who's in the peak performers inner circle level of their membership. So let's remind all of them that this is a perfect month to pull out all those audio recordings and to, I mean, it's a lot of content. What is it, probably 12 to 18 hours of content?
It's 12 videos right now. They're all about an hour, 18, something like that. So it's a
perfect time to chunk them up as one video with discussion and training per week, and to, you know, to take the next couple of months and really go through all that training thoroughly with your staff. And of course, you know, our mission here for the Peak Performance Group is to make sure that everybody is at least in the top 5% of the income levels in the country. That threshold is $150,000 a year household income. And really what distinguishes what we're doing with NAPNA with all the also-rans out there in the industry is, you know, our mission is to have every professional school owner in the top 20% and our peak performers group in the top 100, the top 3% or the top 5% and the top 1% as the inner circle. So we're really working on moving everybody up through those cycles to make sure that not your gross income but your net income is where it should be relative to our professional competence.
Yeah, and I think that the last item on what you were saying a second ago was, you know, that is the difference in what we've been talking about. I think we've been pretty good at attracting people who want to follow the premium version, the premium model in the industry, rather than the health club model. I mean, again, the health club model depends on high volume, high attrition, low price, frankly, low quality of service delivery. And you know, the problem is developing high volume is the problem, right? But also, so I think most of the people on the call today fall into the camp of they'd rather not have to enroll 50 students a month at $50 a month to make any money. They'd rather enroll 15 or 18 students a month, keep them for 3 to 5 years, create really good black belt over time. So I definitely think that, in our intro discussion today, I think that's our frame. We really, the people we do have on the call, really do want to run a professional school. They want to be, the leading expert in their field, in their area. So this intro process, the beginning, the front end of the business, the first experience they have with you when they visit, orchestrating that process is essential to that part. So let's start there. What's the first, the way I've described this in the past, and especially over the last several weeks of these little meetings, is the intro really is an extended sales process. And some schools are doing, a two-lesson, free two-lesson intro, one lesson, three lessons, 2 weeks, whatever. Maybe you can start there. What have you seen that are the most efficient, the least efficient, and how do we orchestrate the beginning of that?
Well, I think maybe the main thing is the mistake that people make is in when they change the offer, they change the sales process. And so I guess what I mean by that is, see, the offer can be a 4-week program, a 5-week program, it can be a 6-week program, it can be a 2-week program, it can be a 2-lesson, it can be a 1-lesson. And in all of those cases, you've got to make sure you do the enrollment when they're ready. Because if you don't do the enrollment when they're ready, they don't get readier. They start dying on the vine. And what we're seeing is, and I guess I would generalize it this way, is in the adult market, adult men coming in for, oftentimes they're coming in for MMA and they're being put into a adult ranking progress check, traditional Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program effectively, adult women being put into let's say a cardio program, high-level personal development program. With the adult market, we're seeing oftentimes the best closing is at the first lesson. Sometimes it's at the second lesson. And now, my belief system for the kids market is I prefer to do a 2-intro process and enroll them on the second lesson. Now, the reason I'm making a distinction is it's imperative, especially with the kids, that you have all the decision makers present, and if you're enrolling a 9-year-old, you're talking about you need dad and you need mom. Sometimes you need dad, mom, the new stepmother, the new stepfather. Sometimes you need grandmother, and it takes a couple of intro process in order to get all those people there. But what you don't want to ever do is bring somebody in on, let's say, a summer program that's 4 weeks, and then just put them into class and think you're going to enroll them in the third or fourth week. Many of the schools that I've worked with do some kind of VIP program. So if your buddy comes in from a birthday party or at a belt graduation or something, they get a 1-month free pass. And what happens with that 1-month free pass is they still enroll on either the first or second visit. I've seen people do a very effective, 3 months for $197, summer program. Guess what? They still enroll by the second visit, because if you let it string itself out, you end up oftentimes with, they don't get enrolled or not. So I think that's the first thing, is to make sure that you've got it set so that you're either doing a 1-intro or a 2-intro process. And of course, what I mean by that is you can do 1-intro and need to bring the wife down, so it becomes 2. You can do it 2 intros and need to have the grandmother down, so it extends itself into 3. But you never just put them into class and then expect that you're going to grab them out of class on a Tuesday or a Thursday when they're coming in and then get the enrollment done, because that just never works.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. So the first couple of experiences I have, whether you're going to do 1 lesson enroll, 2 lessons enroll, again, everything that they experience in the beginning of that cycle is about a sales process. It's about tipping the scales in your favor. I like Tony Robbins' version of this. He does some NLP sales training. Did some a long time ago, and it's one of the best programs, frankly, I think he's ever put out on DVD. But, he talks about urban, urban, and drab, emotional reasons to buy now, logical reasons to buy now, or on one side of the teeter-totter. and on the other side is drab, which is the dominant reason to avoid buying, right? And right now, drab is much heavier than urban and lurban. And your job is to make urban and lurban so heavy that it, you know, catapults drab off the other side of the teeter-totter, right? So you've got that. You have what you have, the dynamic you have when a new student comes in is they have predispositions, right? They have belief structures that have been created by other people in the community. They really don't know what you offer yet. You know, in most cases, the overwhelming majority of people who are customers, people who are, you know, prospective students of martial arts schools, they don't know anything about it. They really don't know what your values are. They don't know you. They don't know, like, or trust you. They don't value what you have to offer yet. They're just curious, right? So what happens is you have to, in that, whatever the length of that initial contact is, you have to try to get them to understand what you're all about, and at the same time, sort of disrupt anything that they might be thinking about you that's negative, right? So we know that there are several objections that people have to the sale. There's price, there's commitment, there's do I have to sign a contract, there's do I have to do an EFT, right? There are all these objections they have. And really what you're trying to do is build the sales process that helps, you know, create their thinking, to change their thinking from the way it was to the way you want it to be, right? So maybe they just were in a soccer league and the coach sucked and they really feel burned about it. And you know what I mean? Maybe that was their last experience. And they're coming to you with all that baggage. So you create this front-end process, this intro process, this new customer, new student orientation process, whatever you want to call it. And that process is designed to diffuse all the potential landmines that are out there, right? Now, when you describe what most schools do is just kind of throw them in class for a couple of lessons, well, see, none of that is going to get them to think the way you want them to think, right?
No. Well, yeah, you want to have a well-designed introductory process, and the crux is always comes back to the first lesson. And again, when we did the little sales training boot camp, what we found in analyzing the and these are high level schools that were there. Many of them are $35,000 to $50,000, $60,000 a month schools, but still in their case, what the problem was is they were trying to, quote unquote, sell too much in talking to people one on one. And what you're describing is exactly right. That first class that people come in, really all the selling should be done in a classroom environment. And it should be done from the standpoint of showing them what you teach in the school, having them actually experientially, you know, do some of it, but then explaining all the whys of how it works and so forth. And at the same time, you want to wrap in several elements. One is an explanation of benefits with as little emphasis as possible on features. So you're showing them, you're teaching them a few things. That, by definition, is features. But as you're teaching those things, you're talking about what the benefit is. In other words, if I was teaching somebody a front kick, I'm talking about the benefit of balance. I'm talking about the self-defense benefit of increased reach from your legs and increased power from your legs compared to your arms. And I'm teaching them the benefits of developing posture with balance, the health benefits of developing flexibility and how that all ties together. So whatever the movement is tied to what the benefit of learning that movement, not just why you want to be able to do these things physically. The other thing, and again, it's so important, is that it's not about teaching them kicking and punching. It's about teaching them life skills. And it doesn't matter whether you're talking about a 45-year-old woman, a 28-year-old woman, a 35-year-old adult male, a 4-year-old child, or a 12-year-old child. In the case of a child, you're sharing benefits with the parents and teaching the kids enough things that they're going to have fun. And the kid can benefit, you know, picture themselves as, you know, the Kung Fu Panda or whatever is currently in their mind, and or Karate Kid, and the parents are going to be visualizing the straight-A student who's immune to negative peer pressure, who never touches drugs, who develops in the way that they want to see them. So that first class is incredibly important. And, as far as getting into very specifics, it's probably, about 30 minutes in most cases, probably 15 to 30 minutes with teaching them. Again, you got to be careful what you're teaching them, things that are very simple, things that are not violent or violent sounding, things that all have benefits wrapped up into the explanation. You know, in the Junior Institute back in the 70s and in high school since, is the format has been pretty simple to follow. It's been a little introduction about what you're going to be working on today. It's been a little bit of stretching, but not in the case that they're, you know, uncomfortable. Then we basically would teach them, you know, attention, bow, ready position, never talking about things like fighting stances. And then we would teach them a back fist, and then we would teach them a front kick, and then we would teach them the combination of the two, and we would teach them the student creed. And within all of that is we would talk about the, and I'm assuming it's a child for a moment, we'd talk about job lists and some of the other things that they need to work on, because martial artists are disciplined and martial artists are well-behaved and martial artists, you know, if they're going to learn extremely high-level physical activities, they've got to develop the emotional and the intellectual skills to go with it. And really, that would be the outline, but then the important thing would be to be pre-framing them for the enrollment at the second lesson. In other words, that both parents are going to be here and they're going to review all the information that we're going to send home, and that they're going to come back having made a decision whether they're going to move forward with the program or not, that we're going to finalize it. And if they hadn't already got a uniform, that we'd get them the uniform with that next lesson. So, you know, but really it's all about talking about benefits throughout the process, and then doing some techniques only so that you have physical activity and you get the endorphins rushing, but also so you can explain what the benefits to them overall are of learning those techniques are.
Yeah, and let me go back to half a step. So the first thing, obviously, is you have to identify what it is exactly that they want, right? So, you know, almost all schools are using some type of an evaluation form, something like that. And, you know, we've got versions of this up on that financial control and, you know, financial retention and control system on the website, things like that as well. And, you know, I've seen a lot of different versions of it. But really the crux of the matter is this. When the student comes in, you really have to find out what exactly it is that they're trying to accomplish. You want to try to figure out what problem you're trying to solve, right? And again, this isn't just about an activity. This isn't just about kicking and punching. We're actually trying to solve problems here. And sometimes parents don't really know. Sometimes they're not really sure. Sometimes they don't really know exactly what you do and what to expect from you and things like that. So, you know, you want to give them some kind of a list, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. You know, because as they read things, you know, as you read a question, you start asking yourself the question, right? So, you know, you'll have some sort of an area on this evaluation form where they're selecting what it is that they want to accomplish, what they want their child to accomplish in the program. And as they read all the other benefits, that's sort of being supplanted in their mind, right? They're sort of now realizing that, oh, I didn't know it was about self-esteem and self-confidence as well. Oh, yeah, let me check that too, you know? So you want to make sure that they're going through that kind of an experience. But also as they complete that form, you've got to look at it, right? So you take the form and you review it quickly. And everything that you're going to talk about when you do the physical lesson should relate to those things, right? So if they, you know, want their son or daughter to become more focused and have higher levels of self-confidence, then talking about other things doesn't really do you a lot of good today, right? So the intro should be completely customized to what it is exactly that student wants or what that family wants. It doesn't mean the techniques or the tools that you're using change. It's just how you describe these things.
I guess what I was going to say is two things. One is, you know, the first introductory can be private or it can be a small group. The second introductory can be private or it's a small group. What historically we have found is the second introductory is being part of an orientation class, assuming you appropriately, in other words, a beginner class, assuming you appropriately orchestrate that beginner class, works out fine. But when you're talking about, you're basically looking for what their hot buttons are. So you're looking for why did they come to you to begin with. Now, depending upon how promotional you are, so let's say that I just generated 259 appointments from Tree Weekend with Kung Fu Panda. Well, an awful lot of those people, the problem is an awful lot of them stumble into the doors, not even thinking in terms of they're looking for this for something other than as a purely recreational program. And that's where what you're talking about, Toby, is as you introduce them to all of the benefits and values of what we teach, then they start sorting out for things that they really do want and that we really do need. But you know, let's generalize it for a second. If you're talking about for a child, and so you know you could subset by the ages, but let's just generally, if you're talking about a child, what does the parent want? Well, it's rare for a parent to be looking for Taekwondo, Shotokan, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Goju, Judo. They're not looking for your style. You know, I caused a lot of controversy at the regional seminars by, you know, explaining to them, the only one who cares about your style is you. But you don't want to be spending any time talking about Kenpo. You don't want to be spending any time talking about MMA. You don't want to be spending any time talking about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. What the parent is looking for the child is they're physically, they're perhaps looking for a way for the child to stay in shape, a way for the child to excel in other sports activities, a way for the child to gain additional coordination, right? They're next perhaps looking for, if they ever need it, for some sense of self-defense, so they're not going to be a victim or vulnerable. But they're also looking for emotional growth. So they're looking for a child to be able to overcome obstacles, for them to be immune to negative peer pressure. They're looking for them to develop confidence. They're looking for them to develop self-discipline. And, you know, and that manifests itself in the willingness to do their chores at home without being asked, the willingness to do their homework without being hounded. And we can keep subsetting this list, but you know when you're going into the introductory class that you want to talk about physical from the standpoint of why what you're teaching is going to be effective in avoiding self-defense situations. And then if a child is attacked by an adult or has some kind of situation like that, why they'll be able to deal with it. Then why this is going to be excellent for keeping them in shape, avoiding them putting on any extra weight, helping them becoming coordinated, helping them do other physical activities. But then even more important, you want to be talking about why black belts in martial arts tend to be valedictorians, tend to be A students, how that works, how they become immune to negative peer pressure, how they manage to see obstacles and overcome them rather than get stuck by them, how they develop unshakable self-confidence, and so forth. So for a child, that's the starting point of the list of what you're talking about. And when you can hone in on something, so let's say I hone in on a medical condition. So I hone in on the child has ADD. Well, now what I can do within the context of that is I can explain why teaching these physical skills benefit ADD students in certain ways, and how it's been scientifically validated that this is what works. How teaching these physical skills help them get off of the Ritalin or whatever it might be, help them focus in the classroom, and help them achieve and become a student. So now I can address the ADD within these contexts. Or if I have a behavior problem at home, so let's say the child has a little bit of a temper problem, I can then talk about these same things, but talk about specifically how this level of self-discipline combined with the personal confidence is going to short-circuit those temper tantrums that are mostly caused by either self-esteem problems or their... Does that make sense? So I can talk about all those things in that context. I think what really we've seen many times is school owners get so fixated in what they do that they start talking about Kenpo and the history of Ed Parker and the history of the forms and why it was done the way it was done and how that works, that they miss that the introductory students, they don't care about that. And the more you talk about it, the more you push them away rather than pull them forward. I mean, you know, my background is Junri Taekwondo, but we're not going to spend any time talking about, you know, the evolution and history of Taekwondo and the evolution and history of Junri and the evolution. We're not going to spend any time talking about that unless and only if somebody comes in with some knowledge or previous experience that we then need to address. That would be the only time we would talk about that. The next thing I think that people miss is, let's say I'm bringing in an adult male. Well, we make the mistake of thinking that even if we know all this stuff with a child, we make the mistake of thinking that what the adult told us is the reason that they're there, is truly the reason they're there. So let's say that I'm talking about adult male, 37 years old, who's an executive, who's coming in to train in MMA. And what they may tell you is they want to come in and they want to learn the stuff they've seen on TV and they really want to become physically adept at that, and they used to be an athlete and they want to really achieve at a high level. Well, they tell you that stuff. But what they really want is they want to feel confident. They want to really get in good shape and feel like they're physically attractive again. They really want to be able to, you know, walk home after, you know, at dark after they get done with work for the day and really not feel intimidated. They want to be able to stand up to the bully at work, not physically, but verbally, be able to kind of stand their ground and feel like they're in charge. And that person won't tell you any, if many, of those things. And you've got to be aware enough to know that even if they tell you, well, I used to be an athlete and I want to get back in better shape, they also mean they want to have a high level of confidence and they want to have a high level of focus and discipline. And they really want to, if confronted at work, be able to stand their ground verbally, and if confronted on the way home, to be able to stand their ground physically if needed. There's all of those things that are going on behind the scenes, and you've got to be adept enough at addressing each of those issues during that introductory process so that they understand and know that they came to the right place.
Yeah, and let's take that example just for a second, that, you know, we all have an opportunity to sort of look at the highest level of people addressing that problem on television every night. I mean, if you take a look at the example of, the, like you said, the man who said he used to be an athlete and now wants to get back into shape. Well, why? Right? There's a reason he wants to get back in shape. It's not just because, I don't know, there's a reason. You know, maybe he's newly single and wants to go attract a new girlfriend. Maybe he's, you know, whatever. But there's a reason behind the why. There's always a why. And if you watch late night infomercials, you know, weight loss infomercials, you name the product, they're very good at addressing those types of things. And they do it, you know, they do it in a way that's non-confrontational and non-threatening, and that's kind of like, you know, that's where we are. So certainly you're not going to ask them, well, you know, are you looking for a new wife? You know, why is it? You know, certainly you're not going to go down that road. But you certainly are going to try to figure out why is it that he wants to lose a few extra pounds. And then we're going to address that benefit. We're not just going to, you know, show him six exercises. He can go to the Y and do that. He can go to the gym and do that. He can go, right? I mean, there's a lot more to that. And, you know, I think an example, to expand on it just a little bit, Sean Harvey is one of our Inner Circle members in Bermuda. And he's, you know, gravitated to a strategy that we've been teaching for a really long time, and he's really making it work well with his women's cardio kickboxing program. He's got a very high-level cardio kickboxing program. Right now it's something somewhere around $297 a month for his kickboxing, a boot camp type of a program. And he has built a renewal and upgrade process for that class, and basically his script is something like this. This does relate, trust me. His script is something like this. Well, you know, Mrs. Jones, you've been training in the program for X number of days, X number of weeks now. What a lot of our members found is not only does this program help them accomplish their fitness goals, losing 5 pounds, losing 10 pounds, becoming more flexible, becoming stronger, but they also learn the skills, they learn the process of accomplishing their life goals. They learn how to set long-term goals and break those long-term goals down into intermediate and then short-term goals and daily goals, and take action on them. So now they're not only accomplishing their fitness goals, but they're starting to accomplish their career goals and their family goals and their financial goals and their need for security, their security goals. You know, is that something you'd like to expand on, right? Now, how that relates to what we were just talking about is, you know, obviously that's an upgrade conversation, right? But that relates directly to what we're talking about. He's addressing the real need. The fitness piece of it is the technical, right? I wanted to lose 10 pounds. Well, why? How will that make you feel? What will that do for you? What will you be able to accomplish when you do that? So that's exactly the same conversation that we should be having in our intro process. If Mrs. Jones comes in with Johnny and she checks off on your sheet of paper that she wants Johnny to improve his level of focus. See, if you say, oh, I see, you want him to improve his level of focus, okay, well, martial arts definitely does that. Johnny, keep your eyes on the sheet of paper and show him how to focus on your target. Well, that's good, right? That's good. Most school owners in the industry would miss that completely, right? They would check off focus, and they would go teach their first introductory lesson and talk about their grandmaster and how many bricks he could break with his head and how long he's been studying martial arts. That would be their intro, right? That's like the bottom 50% of the industry. The mid, let's say, 30% of the industry would say, oh, so you want Johnny to work on his focus? Fantastic. We definitely help with that. So, Johnny, here's a target for you. Here's how you do a front kick. Okay, now, you know, your mom said that, you know, developing focus is something that's really important, and certainly that's really something that's important for you, not only in martial arts but in school. So show me how to focus with your eyes. We're going to keep your eyes right on this little, you know, X on this paper, and I want you to touch that X with your toe each time you do your front kick. But first, you have to touch it with your eyes. So let me see your focus, right? And then we move it around so that their eyes have to move around, right? See, that's pretty good. That's like level two, right? But then level three, for our folks who are performing at a very high level, take the next step, right? And the next step is, well, Mrs. Jones, fantastic. So I see that, you know, you're interested in Johnny working on his focus skills, so let's practice that. And then we practice the focus exercise. And then we say, now, Mrs. Jones, let me ask you a question. If Johnny were able to improve his focus level, kind of like what you saw here today, well, how do you think that might help him in school? Oh, I see. It would help him focus on his teacher better. Fantastic. How do you think that might help him in his life, you know, as an adult? Oh, I see. See, now you're directly connecting future benefits with training in your academy, right? So it's kind of like this Tony Robbins NLP future pacing strategy, right? So, you know, there's kind of like three levels there. I hope that makes sense to everybody. You know, level one is you teach the kick and the punch and you hope that they like it, right? Level two is you kind of address directly the benefit, right, of why you use, you know, Mrs. Jones wants to see discipline, self-discipline. So when we do the attention stance, we, you know, teach the little lesson of self-discipline, how this is, it takes a lot of self-discipline to be able to stand really still, and that's what a black belt looks like, and, you know, whatever. But then the third level is we start relating and connecting the skill that we're teaching, the skill that they're going to be learning in class, the skill that they must enroll in our program to accomplish, to how that's going to affect them in school, how it'll affect them at home, how it'll affect them in their future, how it'll affect them as an adult, how will it affect them when they have a family to take care of, right? Those types of things. So I know it's kind of general, but it's extremely important to connect those dots for them.
Well, and by the way, not to give people the wrong impression, we're not talking about this is sitting down one-on-one. This is in the classroom context, right?
Exactly.
And you should do the same thing that we're talking about here forever. I mean, it should be the same conversation that's been having in your first introductory class as is happening in your intermediate class as is happening in a brown or black belt class. Now, you're constantly addressing benefits in addition to features. Obviously, as they get, you know, more and more advanced into your program, you're teaching them more meticulous, detail-oriented features of what let's say you're teaching a traditional Shotokan form. You're teaching the moves, but you're also teaching the application. Then you're also teaching the benefit of learning that application and the physical, emotional, spiritual benefit of having learned that. I mean, so many times we forget the purpose of, say, a traditional form is mental discipline and physical discipline, and we forget to teach them what the traditional application in a defense situation is, but also the higher levels of why you're moving the way you are and the development that you're doing with your hips, your shoulders, with your coordination, with your focus, with your ability to apply power, and then how it would apply in a modern self-defense situation, how it would apply into a overall personal development context. So all of those things are essential.
Yeah, you know, and as you see, it's an extremely important point. You know, we're talking about the intro today, so, I mean, that's kind of what we're focusing on. But this isn't about bait and switch, right? You can't train yourself and your staff how to teach a great intro and do what I was just describing, right?
Exactly.
You know, anybody can be good for 30 minutes, right? But you really got to be good forever, right? But, you know, again, that's not the frame of our conversation today. But I think it is extremely important. It's not about how do I, you know, learn to deliver a 30-minute script and then go fail them on the classroom floor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like, you know, we're not in elementary school. we actually have to get the result that we sell, right? So, I think that's extremely important. Okay, so let's do a quick recap. And then perhaps take a breath if there are any questions. But let's do a quick recap. So the big rocks from today so far are a clear and defined intro process is essential. We're not talking about just, you know, 6 weeks for $69 or 4 weeks, right? We're talking about a clear introductory process, a new customer experience that is orchestrated and clearly defined and well executed, right? So we know what they're going to experience in lesson one. We know what they're going to experience when they go home from lesson one. We know what they're going to experience when they come in for lesson two. We know what that process is all about. Okay.
Specifically, let's make sure we outline this for people from a standpoint. We'll distinguish between, let's say, an adult coming in for themselves and a child, a parent bringing in a child. But think about what the steps are here. Is you either have you met them at a county fair and made an appointment, right? Or you have an inbound info call or an inbound walk-in or an inbound registration on your website, or you have an outbound lead call. And each of those steps is designed to make an appointment for them to, I'm going to say we're doing a child, so it's a two intro process. So designed to make an appointment for them to come in for an introductory class at the school. Now, you can vary up the offers, but let's say the offer is two free lessons. So they're coming in for an introductory class. So the structure in here is I talk to them, let's say, in person. I make an appointment for, let's say, it's Tuesday night at 7. Then on Monday night, I call and confirm the appointment. Very important step. And if I manage to, and I would prefer to also text them and to also email them, right? So I've got multiple contact portions. In fact, if I send a little note card home to their mailing address, especially if I have time to do it, I'd be even in better shape. And I'm convinced that, you know, the world is evolving where direct mail and texting are going to be the two things that are most effective. But so I want to confirm the appointment. And then on Tuesday, again, I confirm the appointment. That seems a little overkill, but you've got to realize if you make an appointment that's not confirmed, I mean, look at your dentist's office and your hair salon. If they don't confirm an appointment, most people don't show up. The same thing with your introductories. Then they come in for a first introductory. Now, it's surrounded by pieces that are important. The greeting at the front door, if you don't greet them appropriately and make a good first impression within three steps of the door, you've got a problem. And then the preliminary. And again, if you let somebody walk in and go sit on the bench for 30 minutes before anybody talks to them, you've got a real problem. So the preliminary things that happen in terms of somebody showing around the school, greeting them, using their name, having them feel comfortable. Then you have the actual class. And the class is just like a public speak. It has tell them what you're going to tell them what you told them. And you want to have a concise outline that, you know, again, for a child is getting them excited and at the same physically doing things and at the same time is talking about the benefits of the program. Then afterwards, you've got a rescheduling process for the next lesson that is all about prepping them for the enrollment next time they come in. Then you have a confirmation process of making sure that they remember and they show up for the lesson. And frankly, the tighter the timeline is between that first point of contact and their first lesson and the tighter the contact is between the first lesson and the second lesson, the better your ratios are going to be. So if you can make it no more than 24 to 48 hours before the first step and the second step, and no more than 24 to 48 hours between the first intro and the second intro, better off you are. And then you have the greeting, the pre-qualification process before the second lesson. Pre-qualification means I know that they're prepared to pay today and they're prepared to enroll today and that they like the class and that all the decision makers are there. And then you have a second introductory class that's going to, again, not screw up what you did in the first class. That's the biggest piece. The second is to reinforce the benefits and reinforce the physical behaviors. And then you need to pre-qualify before you go into an enrollment conference and then have the steps properly for the enrollment conference. And I think so many times what we've got to make sure we're clear on before any of these calls is we have a very specific action steps that everybody can go back and take to make sure that they're ready to dramatically improve their ratios. And again, all of this is what to remind for everybody in Peak Performers Inner Circle, is we covered every step all the way through prepping for and doing the renewal process in that sales training workshop for Peak Performers Inner Circle. So for everybody in that level, I would really recommend you go back through all the MP3s or the videos and use those for staff training as well.
Yeah, and by the way, the videos for those groups will be up. They're actually all up now, but they're on the new member site.
Yeah.
Which I'll be asking some people to beta test for me in the next couple of days. I have one or two more little items I want to put on there before I put any members in there to test it. So should be before next week, and I'm kind of excited about it. We've got a bunch of new tools and some collaboration tools and things like that we're going to use, and in fact, for Maximum Impact members as well, we have a new discussion forum that is highly interactive, and you don't have to log in a second time, and it's much smoother. So over the next few days, I'm going to be, in fact, anybody on this call, you know, you guys are the most engaged. There's about 60 people on the call now, so you know, you guys are the most engaged right now. So I'll suss out the list, and I'll get you guys into that new member site earlier. So,
I would suggest we transition into questions, but. Maybe let me go through a couple of reminders on the process to do that. So anybody do they have something they have to do to queue up and to get in queue to ask questions?
Yeah, *6 on your phone will unmute you, and then I'll see your little hand go up, and then I can call you up by, like, you know, I don't know, the last four of your phone number or something like that. But *6 will unmute you.
So any questions on the introductory process that we're covering in some detail today, or on anything else, is fine as well. So be thinking about that. But so let's remind everybody: we've been doing this series of regional seminars, and just did a small one in Orlando on Sunday before July 4th in conjunction with the U.S. Open. But we did one already in Dallas, New York, and Chicago. All three were, I think, very successful, well attended. We've had. We've seen members who attended having great results and really, you know, getting a chance to anchor in for that better. And we have on the agenda right now, we're actually going to do Colorado first weekend in August, and then we're going to do Washington, D.C., which will be the second Saturday of September. We're going to do Los Angeles, that's the fourth Saturday in September. And then in very short order, we're going to be scheduling to do Philadelphia, Seattle, probably Toronto, Vancouver, as well as Houston and several other major cities. So we certainly welcome feedback on where we should be going. We're gonna probably hit at least the top 10 metro markets here. And what we did this year is, in lieu of Quantum Leap and Extreme Success Academy, is we took the show on the road, and it's been very, very, very successful so far. So we intend to hit the top 10, if not the top 20 metro areas in the country, and to keep that momentum going. The other thing I would mention as we transition to questions here is we really are focused on keeping all NAPMA members in the loop on the what's new. And we've kind of started dubbing the company NAPMA 4G as in fourth generation. And it's not about fourth generation internet access, about the fourth iteration of the company, but we're doing an extensive webinar series for the peak performers in our circle to leapfrog off of what we just did on the sales seminar. And it's going to be everything you need to know in the current world of internet. So search engine optimization as one module, pay-per-click in Facebook, Google, Bing, Yahoo as another module. Proper website design will be another one. Proper follow-up, sequential email, voicemail, et cetera, will be another one. Using social media in today's world will be another one. So we're going to do a webinar series here pretty quickly to really, really hit all of that, again, for the peak performers in our circle. For members who missed the seminar tour, if you might want to go to natna.com/free video. And there's a 90-minute clip from the seminar in Chicago that you'll probably find pretty useful. And also, I'm going to be on a pretty limited schedule here in July, but I'm booking myself to do one-on-one school evaluations if you'll give me enough information to have it valuable. Many times, just with a trained eye looking at your numbers, we can find 100,000, 200,000 a year that you're missing. So if you want to go to that video and watch it and then give me some feedback on where your school is now, we can schedule a one-on-one call to give you some ideas on how to jumpstart and move forward from there. But anyway, Toby, questions now. Who has some specific questions on introductory process or, frankly, anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like we have a few that are unmuted here. So let's go. If the last four of your phone number are all 8, 8888, you are unmuted. Are you there? 760 area code? I see your hand. Your phone may be muted otherwise. Let's go on to what's next. So if your last four are 8888, we're going to move on, and perhaps your phone is muted separately. Okay, we also have one other unmuted here too. Let's see, 0835 is your last four, 0835. You are also unmuted.
Yeah, this is Paul Grusho in Rochester, New York.
Hey,
I'm good. Actually, I was, when we first started, doing the private introductory lessons, and then we kind of went back to, or we went to where we would put them into a first class for their first introductory lessons. And I definitely want to go back to the private one, but my question is, how do you work it out? Because we're a smaller academy. It's pretty much myself and one other person that helps out like three or four times a week. And we were running into situations where we'd have like 5, 6, 7 intros booked for one day. How can you work that out? I guess, what do you do about a situation like that?
So let me start with that. Here's two things that I think you didn't say specifically, but is there's three options, right? There's a one-on-one first introductory class. There's a small group only of people there for introductories. And then there's the first introductory time they come into a beginner class. And I really like them coming in the first time and going into a beginner class, but I like both a small group setting for the introductory as well as a private one-on-one introductory. And, you know, for my school, for a year, we had Tuesday, Thursday at 7, Saturday at 1. That was just designed as a group first introductory. And so one way you can bridge that gap is put in your regular class schedule first introductory times so that it's slotted in like a regular class. So if you had, let's say, a 30-minute slot every day, then you can slot in the people coming in for introductories into that time, and you're not having somebody just need two first introductories back to back. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, actually, yeah.
And the thing to consider And again, I don't know what your school looks like right now, but if I have, let's say, 7-year-olds through 12-year-olds, and I have them all in the same little group introductory class, that works out fine. Now, if I'm convincing their parents to add on, and I also have parents in that class, that works fine. Now, if I have a 7-year-old coming in looking at a kids program and an adult 32-year-old male coming in by themselves, you can't mix those because the child's not going to mind having the adult in the class, but the adult doesn't want to think he's coming into a kids program. So you've got to be aware of that. You've also got to be aware of the little ninjas is not putting them in with who are too much older than them, or making sure that you have a tight student-teacher ratio so that they don't perceive that their 3-year-old or 4-year-old or 5-year-old is getting lost in the shuffle with kids that are too much older than they are.
Yeah, right now with the little ninjas, we're doing really well as far as having at least 3 or 4 either SWAT team members or at least 2 instructors on the floor.
Yeah.
It's more or less like after the events that we do, we seem to have days that are packed with like 5 or 6, like maybe 3 days in a row or what have you. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed really hard to do the tour separately. But I definitely like that idea of scheduling times into the schedule. Right now we have classes that just end back to back, so.
Well, yeah, you can just slot it in. So if you rejigger your class schedule, you can add a 30-minute introductory slot every day. And, you know, and of course, you know, be mindful of the times. If you put them all at 3 o'clock or 9 o'clock, you're not going to get a lot of the people who want to come in. But, you know, it seems like for the kids, you know, they want to be there sometime between 5 and 6:30 and maybe a little earlier. And for the adults, sometime between 6 and 9. But if you just slot those into the schedule, that works real well. The other thing to keep in mind, I mean, with the two groups that I work with one-on-one a lot, with our franchisees and with the Inner Circle, is we've been making adjustments based upon two things. One, upon keeping really good statistics, so knowing how many appointments, how many confirmations, how many firsts, how many seconds, how many enrollments, but also based upon volume. So one of our franchisees last month generated 258 first intro appointments last month. Well, very hard to do 258 first and seconds private. And on the other hand, we had one of our Inner Circle members who has about a $45,000-$50,000 a month school, but really is doing it out of really about 6 introductories a week. Now, if you have 6 introductories a week, you can do everything private if you need to. And if you have 258 in a month, it's very difficult to do that. So a lot of what we're tweaking is to watch the flow. And when we have big numbers like fairs, carnivals, movie theaters, etc., that has to turn into more of a group environment. And when you have a smaller number, you can spend a lot more time working with them on a more one-on-one basis.
Yeah, you know the key you know to the small group environment on a first intro is again you don't miss any of the steps, right? So again, you know in the second intro you want to make sure that you get all the decision makers present. You know that you want to make sure that they're ready to make a financial decision on the second lesson. You know you want to overcome all of the objections that you think you're going to have, like I need to talk it over with Dad, or you know I didn't bring a credit card with me, or whatever, you know, right? So you. Just because you're executing in a group, I mean, you know, teaching an intro to one person, it isn't that much more complicated than to teach 2 or 3. You just have to keep separate in your mind what benefits they're looking for, right? And make sure that you're addressing all that. But you just don't want to, now that you're in a group environment, try to miss the steps, right? You got to make sure that you get all the decision makers there. You got to make sure that you get, you know, you have to manage all of that stuff. You don't want to get too lost. Now, one more piece on that, by the way. I've heard... and this probably isn't the case in your case, but I've heard people in the past kind of get stuck in this, kind of mired in this. And when you ask the question, well, you know, about how many, you know, intros are you, how many enrollments are you doing in a month? oh, about five or six. Well, okay, if you're only doing five or six enrollments a month, you're probably only doing seven or eight, you know, maybe nine or ten intros. So it's not as big of a problem as you may perceive it, right? But in your case, it's a little different. But, you know, just measure the number of those that you're doing, and I think you're right. You know, I've seen one other solution to this, which is when you have a cycle all start at the same time, you can do a larger group intro, and it doesn't affect much, but that requires some, like, serious infrastructure changes. So I don't think that's useful, but I think that's right.
Yeah. Well, and again, it was unspoken, but when you start talking about staffing, I mean, staffing should be dependent upon volume, not the other way around. And so if you say it's just me and a couple part-timers, the question is that the appropriate staffing? And I think in most cases, the appropriate staffing is two full-timers in there, and sometimes more than that. And we see two extremes. We've got one school I talked to recently that's grossing $30,000 a month with basically 10 full-timers. That's a bad idea. It's a sure way to bankruptcy. You should be able to run a school up to, let's say, $50,000, $60,000 a month with two good full-timers and over 300 active students, maybe at a third. You know, on the other hand, if you don't have staff, that's not a fixed condition. If you get the volume up, so let's say you go generate 40 intro appointments this month and could generate 30 enrollments, well, you got to go fix your staffing and go get some more people appropriately trained working for you.
Okay, good. Yeah, I had to step away from my machine. So if you're unmuted, go ahead and just speak up, and we'll you can just jump right in here and ask your question. I had to walk away from my dashboard. So any other questions on this topic or others?
I got. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I got one more question. This is actually a question that is slightly off subject, if I can ask. It's about graduation. Is that possible to ask?
Yes.
I've actually been, what we do right now in graduations, we do our cycle rotation. Everybody's doing the same cycle. We have every 2 months. We have a set fee for graduation. Do you guys do that for where you charge every certain amount of months, or do you have that incorporated into your actual dues and so forth? Because I've never really actually heard anything about that with graduation.
You want me to take that one? Well, we may have lost some cover. Well, look, there are kind of two sides to the coin, right? And honestly, in all of our franchise locations and, you know, many others, we don't charge an extra testing or examination fee or graduation fee, right? We just kind of bundle it all into the tuition, and I'll tell you the strategy behind that in just a second. But look, I've seen both models work, right? If you do the pay for exam or pay for graduation model, which a lot of schools do, I mean a lot of associations, that's how they monetize their association dues. They sell the certificate or whatever it may be. You know, there are a lot of ways to make that work. But if you are in that mindset, if you're in that architecture. You just got to make sure that you're dramatically over-delivering on whatever that number of dollars is so that they feel they're getting an overwhelming return on whatever that investment was, right? You know, I see so often, you know, a school charges 50 or 60 bucks for a color belt graduation, and they get the belt, and that was really it, right? There's no, like, ceremony. There's no big hoopla, you know, all that sort of thing. And you know, I think the worst thing in the world you can do is to try to nickel and dime your student body to death, right? Now, again, if you look at dance, gymnastics, cheer, that's what their business model is. I mean, really, if you look at their business model, their model is keep the tuition as low as they can so that they can try to attract as many people as they can, which really doesn't work, but you get the idea. And then it's a new costume every 2 months and a recital every 3 months and a, you know, same deal, right? So their business model depends on this, you know, for lack of a better term, nickel and diming them, right? And I mean, I think that's just a sure formula for low retention, which is what they have. I mean, those industries in general.
That was actually my question, because, you know, we run into, I mean, of course we have a group of students that, you know, we count on, like, probably about, we have right now at least 50 people per month that test and, you know, love it and all that stuff. But at the same time, I don't want the other people that come in, they feel like, you know, well, what's the $50 for, what have you. And I just wasn't sure if I incorporated that into the monthly dues and then didn't have the testing, if that would actually kind of relieve some of the thought of the money that's being spent.
Yeah, Toby, I'm back. I think I was muted there. You know, I don't think either one of us need to hem and haw with the answer. Because we, you know, we don't want to discourage somebody who's locked into it with any association that, you know, that you can't work around that as an issue. The, you know, the main thing is let's take an extreme example. I walked into a school one time and I was watching a class, and here's a class of 22 kids, and all of a sudden they're running over to mom with their hands held out, and turned out what it was a board breaking day, and if you paid a buck a board, you could break however many boards you brought dollar bills over. And the school owner took us in the back room and showed us where he cut the boards, and, you know, patiently explained that he made 75 cents per board, and, you know, that his gross revenue per month on boards alone was, you know, $9,000, and one thing or another. But, you know, you look at that as an extreme example of leaving a bad taste in your student's mouth on a regular basis. And so if you charge $129 a month and then charge them $10 for the patch on the uniform and a dollar a board, and then they have the testing and a whole bunch of other stuff, what happens is every time you're asking somebody for money, is you're having a little ding in the relationship, because Toby calls it building the emotional bank account. And every time you're asking them for money, you're dinging that emotional bank account. So you've just got to be hyper aware of not asking them for a whole series of things, especially, you know, I've seen schools that they enroll somebody and they ask them for $4 for a mouthpiece and $20 for a pair, for $30 for a pair of hand pads and $12 for a patch and $52 for the uniform, and then a test fee, and then now they're going to try to do a $10,000 renewal. Well, I don't want to have any percentage of them so aggravated at all those other little things that I deemed them for, that I even miss one of those renewals because it's going to be more net profit than all the other stuff put together. Does that make sense? And so, you know, if it were me operating in a perfect environment, I'd like to ask them for money once and never again. And, you know, if that was take the equipment package and roll it into tuition, take the exam fees, roll it into tuition, everything else, I'd be tickled to death. Now, that's an extreme perspective. And as Matt Miller was saying, we've seen very profitable schools that are charging exam fees. We've never gotten to the point of rolling the equipment package into the tuition in most cases. But still, you've got to realize there's a spectrum, and you've got to be careful about that. The other thing is comes back to numbers. If you're tracking your numbers, and 95% of the people who are eligible to test are testing, and your dropout rate per month is 2-3%, and your renewal rate is 75% or 80%, then it's not a problem.
Right.
On the other hand, if you don't know your numbers, it probably is a problem. Number two is you've got to look at those three numbers. You know, what's your percent that are eligible that are graduating to a new belt every month? What is the percentage of your student body that's dropping out each month? And what is the percentage that are renewing? And another one of the numbers that we knew already but validated this last Inner Circle meeting was if you run them through an appropriate renewal process and renew them emotionally as well as contractually, to train to black belt and beyond, then the dropout rate drops precipitously. So,
you know, part of the mission of getting them truly committed is going through an evaluation, goal-setting, renewal process. And when you get together all those numbers, what's your percentage of people enrolled that renew? What are your percentage of people on a monthly basis that are dropping out? What are your percentage of people who are eligible to test? And if your ratios are good on all those things, then you don't worry about it. If they're bad on all those things, you look at what the likely culprits might be.
That was going to be my feedback was, you know, look at the ratios and it'll tell you. But the formula for beating the ratio, again, if you're locked into a situation where you've got to do that, is, you know, you just sit down and ask yourself, well, how much stuff am I doing for them that I don't ask for money for, you know? I mean, how often am I having an event in my school that they don't have to pay for or that they perceive as X valuable but I only charge X divided by 10, you know, something like that. So, and that was going to be the outline that I was going to tell you that, you know, in the franchise locations that we do, what we do is we bundle everything together, including something called the Building Successful Kids Program. And inside that program, they're already paying for three tournaments a year, a ninja night every fourth month, a couple of movie nights a year, those types of things. So they never have to pay for anything. They just have this card that they get, and they swipe the card. So they still feel like that we're over-delivering on that tuition. Does that make sense? So they're coming to something about every month, like a tournament or something like that, that they perceive as high value that probably everybody in the industry is charging for, right? But they, you know, swipe their card and they feel like they've gotten tremendous value from their tuition. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, good. Any last question or two, or do you have any other questions, or you're welcome to ask anything you want.
No, I appreciate it. That answered everything. You know, like I said, I just wanted to make sure that I, you know, as far as our percentages for graduations, we're up there. We're doing really well with that. But at the same time, I just don't want to feel like I'm nickel and diming students for to keep that retention, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the retention number tells you a lot. It really does.
Yeah,
we have a very high percentage of people that are upgrading programs and doing the 3 years and beyond. So,
yeah.
But it's just that people drop out of contracts. You know what I mean? So I don't want them to feel that they're being pushed too much. You know.
Well, it all depends. If you're doing the renewal process well, then really once they renew, the dropout rate of the people who are renewed, what were we coming up with? So it'll be one-fifth to 1% a month or something ridiculous like that. So, you know, it really should be once they've gone through the renewal processes like Harvard, you know, that has 98% of the people who enter graduate to their bachelor's degree. We want, of the people who've gone through the renewal process, we want 90 to 95% who actually graduate with their black belt. And if you have a problem in that group where the monthly dropout rate is a high number, that may mean that they feel like once they've gone through that commitment and they've upgraded and so forth, that it's, you know, that is a problem. But again, if your monthly dropout rate is good, if your percentage renewing is good, and if your percentage testing to the new belt each month is good, then it's probably not something to worry about.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what you might do is go to that website, that URL that Mr. Oliver's talking about, nama.com/free-video. And, you know, Mr. Oliver, you have a couple of spots available next week, I think, on Thursday or something like that. But if you go there and fill that form out and fax it back, we'll set up a time where you guys can chat and, you know, kind of drill down into that a little bit. It sounds like there might be some opportunity there, you know.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thanks so much for the question. Any last, we're kind of running out of clock here, but any last thoughts for the day? Any last questions?
Hello, sir.
Again. Yeah, please.
Go ahead.
One question. Back to school is coming, so what avenues of marketing are going to be the best ones to hit this season, please?
Yeah, that's a long answer.
For the top three, direct mail, approaching the school for school talks. I know I've read recently about setting up faculty breakfasts, going in and delivering, you know, croissants and veggie trays. Top three, just real quick, please.
Well, all of those are right. Now, keep in mind, and I don't mean to diss Barry Vanover, but the concept of school talks was screwed up because it was a the program that they sold was a taken from what I called Gym Teacher for the Day back in the 80s. And if you're doing school talks, the key ingredient is permission slips. And so, meaning you send home information from to the parents to get name, phone number, address, email address, permission for the child to participate in the thing, and therefore permission to follow up on them as well. But let me try to give you as concise an answer to that as possible. In our industry, we know there's some seasonality, right? So back to school is one of those times when you can go to work for the kids market and a lot of things work. And over the summer is a time when you can generate a lot of leads, but a lot of things get into some of those people's way from the standpoint of enrolling immediately. So if you look at first, you look at summer, is a lot of the schools that we're working with are looking at adding 1,000 to 2,000, maybe even 3,000, but let's say 1 to 2,000 new leads. In other words, name, address, phone number, email address of people who are at least somewhat interested, warm leads, but who don't end up enrolled right now.
Right.
And so the best use of direct mail and email and all of these other, you know, technical gizmos that we'll work you on text, the best use of that is going to a warm list, right? So if you think of over the summer, let me go get names, address, phone numbers, email addresses, mobile numbers of 1,000 people who are somewhat interested in lessons but for whatever reason aren't ready to enroll in July. Then high on my list, maybe not first on my list, but high on my list, would be going back to those people over and over and over again as soon as school goes back. And so my rule of thumb would be a week or two before school goes back into 4 weeks after school goes back and trying to hit them, once a week by mail, a couple times with a live phone call, and two or three times a week with email, maybe once a week by text. So if you created a warm lead list that you could follow up aggressively, that would be, again, high on my list. And that's not to discount everything else you just said, because all of those things are very, 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 very useful. And so, Toby, what would you add to that?
Well, I wouldn't say anything. Well, I mean, obviously there are other activities that are easy to kind of pick off the vine, but I'll amplify the direct mail strategy. We're seeing right now from a macro level, and I think this will be very useful for everybody, but from a macro level as far as general economic trauma, movement in the economy, market, you know, media that is working and not working, improving, not improving, we're seeing direct mail across market after market after market improving in response rate, right? Whereas a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, you could have blasted, you know, this isn't exactly accurate, but this is the, you know, ratio, right? You know, a year and a half ago, you could have spent $1 million in direct mail and generated like 4 students, right? But now it's a little different. Now the market is thawing a little bit, right? People are more responsive today than they were 18 months ago, okay? So we're seeing direct mail working better and better and better over time. Now, it's still not where it was in 2007, right, nor probably will it be for a while. But I think what I would say, just to expand what you said, was, you know, I would not discount direct mail at all now. You know, now it's definitely got to be a piece of this. It's much more responsive. We're seeing, you know, we're spending exactly the same amount of money in direct mail as we did, you know, on par 18 months ago, and the response rate is much, much, much better. So it's definitely something to be thinking about. And yeah, I mean, anything you can do with the elementary school is a big deal. You know, I mean, you know, when they start coming back for their planning and preparation weeks and things like that, it's definitely when you need to be in front of them.
Well, and just to reemphasize the one point about direct mail is, you know, if I have a choice of mailing to 10,000 people once or 2,000 people four times or a warm lead eight times, I'll take the warm lead eight times any day. And what we miss is the point that you know, the hard part was to get them to raise their hand to begin with. And what we almost always do, everybody does, is give up on them too soon. And we think that we're going to mail them, you know, a big package of stuff. We're going to mail them a big, beautiful, oversized color postcard or whatever it is. And we somehow think they're going to pay attention to it. And some of them do. So you get a few people who call the first time. You get a few more that call the second time. You get a few more that call the third time. But you've got to go back to them over and over and over again, especially during peak times. So if I generated 1,000 leads over the summer, I would be thinking in terms of, you know, I'm going to mail to them every month for, you know, forever. And then in peak back to school time, peak New Year's time, peak mid-spring time, peak summer special time, I'm going to mail to them 4, 5, 6, 8 times and contact them through other mechanisms a bunch of times and have a live person call them after I've hit them 2 or 3 times and make sure I do all of those things. Now, so I guess more specifically answer the question before we run out of time here is we see schools right now that are generating 100 to 150 intros a month through online efforts, pay-per-click and so forth, especially in the adult market. We see schools that are generating 100 to 300 appointments a month by doing fairs and carnivals and parks and movie theaters and all that kind of stuff. And we see schools that are doing very well now, again, with newspaper advertising and newspaper inserts. And, you know, infomercials and long-form advertising on TV certainly has never stopped working. So there are a lot of ways to go about it. And the answer to your question in part is resource constraints. If I'm running a $100,000 a month school and can budget $15,000 a month in advertising, well, I want to be doing direct mail, plus I want to be on TV, plus I want to be doing aggressive pay-per-click, plus I might be buying some online banner traffic, plus I'd probably be doing newspaper inserts. If I'm a small school and don't have that kind of budget, so let's say I'm a $15,000 a month school, well, I'm going to focus my paid effort on warm leads, and I'm going to focus all my effort on generating warm leads. I'm going to be at carnivals and fairs and parks and doing school talks and all of those things, all of it designed to immediately get an appointment or to generate a warm lead, and then I'm going to beat them over and over and over to death with email follow-up, sequential autoresponders, with direct mail follow-up, and make sure that also I put a human being on the phone to follow up with them. Does that answer your question?
Sure, it does, definitely.
So
yeah, I mean there is a you know, an elementary school sweet spot too, and we're probably a few weeks away from it still. But you know, when the teachers come back for their planning periods and things like that, they always typically have an open house and, you know, maybe even like a fall carnival or whatever. I mean, all that stuff is going to be happening too. But you know, again, wherever the herd of prospects are going to be, of course you want to go be in front of them, right?
Yeah.
So you know.
Yeah, so we're 30 minutes from our time limit here. So 30 seconds.
Oh,
but,
okay. Well, guys, thanks so much for your time. Thanks, sir.
And, again, I would reemphasize, go to that NABA.com/free video and fill out that evaluation. 2 is make sure you show up on our regional seminar tour. Next is Colorado, then Washington, D.C., and L.A. And number 3 for our Inner Circle Peak Performers, we're going to do an extensive webinar leading up to back to school on how to generate a huge flow of online traffic. And that's all I have, Master Milroy. Okay, so thanks, everybody.
Ma'am? Hello?